The Parents Show on Mix 92.6. Sponsored by Raiden Solicitors. Award-winning specialist family lawyers. See raidensolicitors.co.uk.
Hello and welcome to The Parents Show on Mix 92.6.
When it comes to parenting, nobody has all the answers.
So we try to bring every possible opinion to parents so you can decide for yourself what is the best way to parent.
We also want parents and those on the journey toward becoming parents to share their experiences with us so that our show becomes a support community for everyone.
We're lucky enough to have had some of the biggest names in parenting and education from all over the world on our little show.
So sit back and listen to this week's wonderful guests here on The Parents Show on Hertfordshire's Mix 92.6. Thanks for joining us.
Hello and welcome to The Parents Show on Mix 92.6. I'm Elisa Carcar, bringing you honest conversations to support and inspire you as we navigate this wild parenting journey together. Today, I'm joined by Rebecca, founder of Alban Osteopathy here in St. Albans. Rebecca is an osteopath, cranial osteopath and breastfeeding counsellor who specialises in supporting babies and their families, particularly around feeding difficulties. Alongside her clinical work, she offers free breastfeeding support drop-ins, head shape assessments and provides a welcoming space for parents who need somewhere comfortable and private to feed their babies whilst out and about in town. Her practice is built around accessibility, inclusion, and supporting families through some of the challenges that can arise during pregnancy, birth, and the early years. Rebecca, thank you so much for joining us on The Parent Show today.
Thank you for having me. Good to be here.
So, Rebecca, let's start with your story. Can you tell us a bit about yourself and what first led you into the world of osteopathy?
Yeah, sure. So I first came across osteopathy as a teenager, had a few kind of falls off a pony, and eventually one day I was just running up the stairs at school into home ec, and I turned my head to the right and I could not turn my head back. So my neck was in so much pain and I was stuck for the whole lesson with my head like turned to the right. So when I got back home, my mum found an emergency osteopathy appointment and she managed to free me up. And just that relief of going from so much pain and so much immobility to being able to move again, and it just felt like magic. So I think that's kind of what got me hooked, that experience of I don't quite know how they did it, but I feel so much better. And so eventually I just kind of followed that train and trained up as an osteopath and been doing that ever since, loving it.
So interesting. So your mum knew to call an osteopath. Like, how did she know about it? Because actually, we probably should even rewind a step further and ask you to explain what an osteopath is, because a lot of people don't know. And even I'm a little bit confused between a few different chiropractors and physios and osteos. It can get quite confusing.
Yeah, that's a really good point. So we basically deal with pain and restriction, and we're just really great at easing up stuck joints and tight muscles and tissues, and we'll treat anything musculoskeletal. So we're best known for back pain and neck pain, but we'll treat knees, elbows, jaws, all kinds of things. And it's just on the premise that if the body is moving well, if the muscles are nice and strong and elastic, the joints are all moving and sharing the load well, then the body can heal itself and all the sort of pain and inflammation will settle down. So it's a hands-on therapy. We tend to be, this is making wild generalizations, but we tend to be a little bit more hands-on than physiotherapists, who tend to rely a bit more on sort of exercise and stretching regimes or practices, and tend to do a little bit less spinal mobilization. So that kind of, you know, if you crack your knuckles, that kind of crunching sensation in sort of spine and pelvis. So yeah, as osteopaths, we do quite a lot of soft tissue work. So kind of stretching muscles, mobilizing joints, and a whole sort of spectrum of strengths of treatment. So from manipulation, similar to a chiropractic experience, right down to cranial osteopathy, where you're using extremely light touch to the point the patient's going, are they actually doing anything?
Well, so yeah, that's so interesting to just understand those distinctions. And you've been working in osteopathy for, I think, over 13 years. And now you have, I don't know how recently, how long ago did you set up Alban Osteopathy?
I think it's nearly 2 years now.
Right. Yeah, here in St. Albans. And kind of what inspired you to set up your own practice, and what was the vision?
Yeah, so I've always been interested in treating babies. I just enjoy babies. And I just think that that newborn period is such a special time for the whole family, for the mum, for the dad, for the baby. It's the creation of a family, and it's really a privilege to be able to be involved in that journey and to help make things a bit easier and smoother, particularly if you've got an unsettled baby or you know, pain, difficulties, complications after the birth as well. So I've been treating babies more or less since I graduated. But more recently, I was working in a therapy room in St Albans, and it was just a lot of pressure for the mums to try and keep baby quiet in a sort of more relaxation and massage type setup. So I really wanted to have a space where mums and babies could be centered and they could feel comfortable to breastfeed, to let the baby have a cry if they need to be able to change the baby, to bring their older sibling, to bring a toddler if they didn't have childcare, for the toddler to be able to be in a safe environment and to play, and for it not to be a problem if they make any noise and, you know, there's nothing to break, and just for it to be a really welcoming and comfortable environment. So that's the premise on which I set up the clinic, so that it's very family-centered care and an environment that is comfortable for babies and small children.
I love that. So if there's any mum or dad, parent out there who are in St Albans town and like, oh, we just had a big poo explosion, or the baby needs feeding quick, where can I go that's going to feel safe and welcoming, then where can they find you?
Yeah, so I'm on Catherine Street, so I'm 43 Catherine Street, and it's pretty much opposite the Croft and Cleaver, is probably the Jubilee Centre. Those are the two big landmarks. Yeah, so when I'm in clinic, the waiting area's open so people can come in, and it's a sort of halfway house. Like if you're still not feeling quite confident to breastfeed in public, or, you know, even you need to heat up a bottle or something or change a nappy, then people are welcome to come in and just use the facilities there, have a feed and a change, and sort of head on into town if that's helpful.
That's so lovely. I wish I'd had something like that when I was first, you know, out with my new baby.
Yes.
With the nappies and the breastfeeding and trying to figure out how to do it in a discreet way.
And yes.
Also not be embarrassed about it.
Yeah, it's knowing where to go, isn't it?
Yeah, knowing all the tips and tricks. Well, we know this one now. Thank you so much. So like, many parents might think of osteopathy as something that, you know, more focused on adults. You said back pain was the kind of the more well-known one, but may not realize that babies can benefit too. Can you give us a bit of an idea of some of the common reasons why a parent might bring their baby to see you, or what should they bring the baby to see you for?
Sure. Yeah. So essentially, osteopathy, we're just relaxing tissues. We're getting more mobility through joints, and we're getting sort of tension out of tissues using sort of a variety of techniques, whether soft tissue or mobilization or kind of fascial unwinding. So babies, we kind of think, oh, you know, they've only just been born. There's nothing to give them tension. But I think if you consider the mechanics of the birth process, there's a reasonable amount of pressure that sort of traverses the baby through the birth canal, and mums will quite often report being in a lot of pain afterwards or even during the labour, and the baby is the other side of that coin, really, and so as they're descending through the birth canal, sometimes they can retain some tension through their head or their neck, particularly if they're not positioned quite right, or they're a much larger baby or a smaller mum, or all sorts of things can kind of influence how that labour and birth process goes. So the things that I really love to see in clinic is if the baby is a bit asymmetrical. So for example, if the baby's always turning one way over the other, then often that can indicate that they've got a lot of tension in their neck or their back. And we're really quite good at relaxing that tension off, getting them moving more symmetrically, and sort of, yeah, letting their development take off. Another thing that I like to see is feeding problems. And again, if there are concerns around feeding, it's something that it's really nice to see early on before, you know, weight gain drops and you get a lot of anxiety from the maybe the health visitors putting a little bit of pressure on to give bottles when you don't want to, or just making you feel a bit worried about how much weight the baby's putting on. And the other one is babies who are unsettled. So sometimes babies are a bit unsettled just because they're a bit uncomfortable. And if they're uncomfortable because they're feeling tight in their neck or their back or somewhere, then sometimes osteopathy can be the right thing to find that tension and relieve it and just help them feel a bit more comfortable and sleep a little bit better and things like that.
Yeah, and it's not like they can tell you. So
no.
Yeah, it's going to come out in other behaviours.
That's right. The kind of colicky behaviours and the sort of difficulty to settle, won't stay asleep, can be indicators, not always, but sometimes.
Yeah, I think, I'm sure you get a lot of parents coming to you when they've discovered a problem, but I imagine you'd probably also like to see people before the problem develops. And just as a, you know, I imagine it would just be really lovely and reassuring just after the birth at some point when you feel ready to sort of get to an appointment to go and get yourself checked and get your baby checked.
Yes, I think that is one thing I would really encourage mums to do is look after yourself as well. So many, you know, I see a lot of babies and I would love it if the mums got themselves looked after as well, because often mums are in a lot of pain with their upper backs, with their necks, you know, stuck in a bad posture feeding because they're sort of so worried about disrupting the latch if they move and things. So yeah, I would encourage mums to look after themselves a little bit more.
Yeah. And that segues very nicely onto my next question, because you're also a breastfeeding counsellor and a feeding coach, which is such a valuable combination of skills on top of the osteopathy. What are some of those common feeding difficulties that parents come to you with? And what advice would you give to parents who might be listening and they're struggling with some of these things right now?
Yeah, I think the big thing is get help earlier the better. And I would say particularly before giving birth, my feeling is there's a lot of focus on birth and too often the mums are not expecting breastfeeding problems, and it's kind of often sort of takes a second place to preparing for the actual labour. So for any pregnant parents, I would say do your research, educate yourself and find out where you can get support if you need it. Hopefully you won't. So some of it is around routine and expectations. Some of it is around positioning for latch. So I hold a drop-in on Tuesdays, which is a nice place to come and we just sort of go over the simple things like the latch and the routine and expectations about how often the baby should be feeding, recognizing when the baby is actually feeding and when they're suckling, but without there being milk transfer. So that's kind of the key thing for successful breastfeeding journey. And then from the more osteopathic point of view, we look at kind of tension in the jaw and neck and any restrictions that might be preventing the baby from getting into a good position, and sometimes the sort of hands-on therapy can help to improve that, facilitate a better position for latch.
Yeah, that's so good to know. So that's on a Tuesday. What time is that on Tuesdays?
So that's 10 to 11 and that's a free drop-in. So if people are passing by, they can come in. There's no need to book or call ahead. You can if you want. But I will be there. The door will be open and we can talk through anything that's going on.
That's so valuable. When I was first setting out on my breastfeeding journey, I was lucky enough to live in London and there was a lot of different services around. So in my first 2 weeks, I was at a breastfeeding clinic almost every day because I was just struggling. I just knew that I just needed to like jump across this and get all over it. And it sorted everything out. And then I just felt so confident after having all that early support rather than, you know, other mums that I've met and they'd left it and then they were getting stressed and then ended up kind of making decisions that they didn't feel happy with because they hadn't sought the support early on.
Yeah. Yeah. And you should be able to get support through the midwife, I think, for the first 10 days. And then there is a feeding team in St. Albans. So it is worth reaching out through your health visitor and things as well, because sometimes they can do home visits. Yeah, it's definitely worth asking.
Yeah, and the earlier the better, like you say, because
absolutely,
this is a new skill that both you and your baby are learning. It's not easy. It doesn't come naturally. It's completely alien to both of you. So it requires support.
Yeah, that's right.
And you're a mum yourself. So how many children do you have?
So I've got three children. I am thankfully through that phase now. So yeah, mine are a little bit older.
How old are they?
So I've got 14, 12 and almost 10.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. It's a similar age to my children too. And I know that you've experienced different birth journeys with each of your children. How has your experience of your pregnancy, birth and motherhood influenced the way you work with parents and babies, do you think?
Yeah, I've been fortunate to have very different birth experiences. So my first one was a C-section and then I had a really lovely VBAC and then I had a not so lovely unexpected unaccompanied delivery at home. So I've had quite a breadth of experience, and I think it brings up a whole range of emotions. So it's kind of given me a lot of emotions and experiences to access that I can then bring to other people's experience, and recognizing, you know, that happens and that's normal and you can get through that as well. So hopefully bringing a bit of encouragement and confidence to families experiencing similar journeys.
What do you think new parents sort of most need to hear during those really challenging sort of first days and weeks and months when there just feels like so much pressure and expectation?
I would love new parents to have more confidence in themselves, to have more trust in their instincts and to trust themselves and their bodies and their babies a lot more. Some parents, it feels like almost like they need to be following a book or following a certain way to be a parent. And I'd say there are many different ways to be a good parent, to be a good mother or father. Yeah. And to really, really lean into your instincts and what the baby's telling you and what you feel you should be doing.
Yeah, absolutely. And tune into your baby, because your baby is unique. You are unique. Your circumstances, your family is unique. And it's very easy to get distracted by all the noise, especially with social media these days. One of the things I love about your work is this practical support you're offering within the community, like allowing people to just drop in and do what they need to do, like the baby change and the breastfeeding clinics and head shape clinics, and just this lovely, welcoming, friendly space that you've created. I feel like accessibility and inclusion seem to be like quite at the heart of what you do. Like, why are those values so important to you?
Yeah, I just feel like so much of this information should just be freely available to families. So I think how to feed your baby and how to prevent like a flat head syndrome, I think it is just really key and basic information that everyone should have access to. So that's why there's no paywall on those drop-ins. Yeah, one of the things that I would love all parents to do a little bit more of is tummy time. And it's so basic, but maybe because it's basic, it gets a little bit overlooked. And that's a really valuable skill for helping the baby to kind of unwind from the birth process, to undo some of that kind of asymmetry that they can pick up through the birth process, and help to prevent some of these flat head presentations that can appear later on if the baby's like always turning to one side. Yeah, so things like that, I would just love all parents to have access to. And that's why I kind of open up and welcome parents to come in and talk through what's going on with their baby, and we can do some stretches and run over some exercises that they can just do at home every day and see the change and feel the benefit from that.
Well, that's so useful. On the subject of tummy time, because I work with parents and young children, and often what I hear is my baby doesn't like tummy time, and they're kind of trying to figure out how they can do it in a way that the baby doesn't get upset. Do you have any sort of tips and advice for that?
I would say little and often. Start on you. So when the baby's very newborn, you don't need to put them down sort of away from you on a mat or the floor or anything like that. You lying on your back and your baby on your chest. So skin to skin is really great for regulating your baby as well. It's really great for bonding, all sorts of good things. And it's great for that sort of physical development as well. So I would say start with the tummy time on you. And then as the baby gets a bit older, just little and often, work it into the routine. So maybe, for example, if you've got like a baby safe mat on the floor near where you change, when you do the nappy change, pop the baby down on the mat while you like throw the nappy away, wash your hands and things like that. So if you give them a couple of minutes before a nappy change, a couple of minutes after a nappy change, by the time you've done all the nappies through the day, you've done easily 15, 20 minutes of tummy time without it being something extra that you have to do.
Oh, that's so useful and so accessible, isn't it? To just incorporate it into the logistics that are already happening.
Yeah, and that's how things get done. If you're like, oh, I've got to do the bottles, I've got to do breastfeeding, I've got to triple feed and all this, and then I've got to do tummy time as well, it's overwhelming. But if you can just work in little times when you put the baby down to pop them on their front, supervised, and then carry on with your day.
That is a great, great tip. And like, do you have any particular stories or transformations, particular positive changes that you've seen either generally or a specific story through your work and just to kind of bring it to life?
Yeah, I mean, generally what I love to see is the growing bond and the changing relationship between the mum and baby as things settle down, as things get easier. So when you've had a baby who's really unsettled and then they start to settle down, seeing that mum become feel closer, feel more confident with that baby and just really developing that bond and that confidence. Most babies sort of is incremental change. So they get a little bit better week on week. And I see babies for a few sessions. There's one or two where they've come in, we've done a session, we've managed to get mum the confidence to take, say, like, stop using the nipple shield and to get the baby to latch directly. And that's made a big difference in the baby's weight gain. And they've put on, you know, twice the amount the following week that they did the previous week. And I had another one very, very tight on one side. And this little girl was a few months old by this point. And so her head was quite flat where she'd been lying on that side all the time. And she responded very quickly to treatment. And the next day she was moving her head both ways and just, you know, it's almost like her neck grew on the table, is the amount of tension that was released there. So we get the occasional sort of like really dramatic ones, but mostly it's just that sort of gradual improvement in range of movement and feeding and bonding.
Well, that's an amazing story. I feel like you've done a really good job of sort of demystifying it and, you know, giving us an idea of what sorts of things that you can help with. And babies is obviously a big speciality of yours. Do you also support other members of the family?
Yes. So we treat the whole family. So more than happy to treat mums and dads and grandparents. And, you know, I love treating the babies and I love seeing the difference it makes around feeding and movement. But I treat knees and backs and elbows and any kinds of aches and pains really as well. And then I've got an associate who comes in and she specializes in pelvic floor recovery. So she does C-section scar massage and she does a bit of internal work as well to help with recovery from tears and episiotomies and the impact on the pelvic floor from the birth process. So that's a really nice way for mums to help themselves recover the sort of before getting back into exercise and things after the 6-week check and the initial tissue healing is done. That can be a really good way to support recovery too.
Yeah, so you support the whole family, and that kind of 6-week the health visitor signs you off, you can feel a little bit like left to your own devices. So it feels like this would be a really nice next step. Right, let's just go and get us all sorted out and feeling strong so that we can, you know, feel our best and, you know, relate to each other in our best way.
Yeah. And I think it's worth pointing out that 6 weeks, that's like the minimum recovery time. That's like your minimum tissue healing. You're not fully healed at that point. Yeah. And I think extending that expectation of recovery, that's kind of where your recovery begins rather than ends. And just taking that pressure that perhaps mums put on themselves to kind of bounce back and to get back to normal and to be doing all the things that they used to do. And to see that as a starting point for recovery more than an end point.
Yeah, that's a really good way to reframe it. How can anybody who's listening find out about your services? So we know you're on Catherine Street in St. Albans. People can come and drop in and change the nappy, have a feed, breastfeeding clinics. Are there other ways in which people can reach out to you?
Yeah, that's right. So my website is www.albanosteopathy.co.uk. So that's probably got my most comprehensive amount of information. I'm on Instagram again at Auburn Osteopathy, all one word, and I try and keep up to date with posting reminders. So I've got the breastfeeding drop in tomorrow, I've got the head shape drop in tomorrow. So I try and post all my dates on there and a little bit more kind of the human stories of what goes on behind the scenes and things that I've treated that week and things like that. And similarly, I'm on Facebook as well. So the website's got my phone number and email, and I'm more than happy for people to reach out to me to have some discussions beforehand if people have got further questions or concerns before getting treatment or getting further advice and things.
Rebecca, it's been fascinating hearing about all these different ways in which you support babies and entire families, and it's just so good to hear about these inclusive and accessible services and the sense of community that you're building here in St. Albans. So thank you for everything that you are doing for our families local to here, and thank you so much for joining us today.
It's my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
If you've just joined us, that was Rebecca from Albans Osteopathy. You've been listening to The Parents Show on Mix 92.6. I'm Elisa Carcar, and I'll be back next time with more honest conversations to support and inspire you on your parenting journey. Until then, take care.
The Parents Show on Mix 92.6, sponsored by Raiden Solicitors, award-winning specialist family lawyers. See raidensolicitors.co.uk.
So welcome back to the Parents Show on Mix 92.6. It's great to have you with us again.
I'm Lydia El-Khoury and I'm delighted today to be joined by the head teacher of Southfield School in Hertfordshire, and that's Angela O'Rourke. Angela, thank you so much for joining us on the Parents Show.
Lydia, thank you so much for inviting me. I'm delighted to be here and to tell you about our amazing school, Southfield Special Educational Needs School in Hertfordshire.
Great. Well, sure, you've asked my first question for me. I want to hear more, please. For anybody who's listening who doesn't know your school, can you tell us more about it?
Absolutely. So Southfield School is the school that does what it says on the tin. We're very proud of being a school that serves our community. We teach children from the whole of Hertfordshire, so it's not just the local community. And some of our children come from, for example, Hemel Hempstead, all the way up to Bishop Stortford, Letchworth. You know, we take, you know, the whole community. The children here are aged between 4 and 11, so we're a primary school, and they come to us with a whole host of SEN needs. Communication is predominantly our bread and butter, and autism is our real sort of specialist field.
That's wonderful to hear that your school exists and that there is a place for children with special educational needs. So neurodivergence is your speciality.
That's it. Yeah, that's right.
That's brilliant. And that's what makes Southfield School unique, I guess. And how do you approach special educational needs?
So it's, you know, the world of SEN is rapidly growing, isn't it? You know, the number of children with HCPs is increasing daily from where we were a few years ago. So we look at every individual child. You know, that's what we pride ourselves on at Southfield. We're about the individual child. What am I most proud of? That the staff at Southfield think through, if this was my child, is it good enough? And that's the bit, isn't it? That's all that parents want to hear, that there's the passion, the drive, the determination to serve every child. No matter, you know, what has happened for that child when they join us, no matter what's happened previously, are we going to be a setting who will take your child and support them to be the best that they can be? We've got an incredible staff team here, Team Southfield. They are just exceptional human beings who go the extra mile each and every day. You know, the children come with huge complexities to us. We take children that, for example, might have been excluded in previous settings, children who might have been on reduced timetables before they come to us. Some children might never have been in a school setting or might never have been in a school setting full time. So we have to take them, this cohort of children, get the right fit in the classes for them. And everything's about identity. Can the children identify with the peer group that they've got? And for me, it's for the children coming in and for the parents coming in. That's a huge part of the families is, does it feel like coming home? Does it feel like that this is the school that you've waited for all your life? And that's what we pride ourselves on, that it feels like coming home and it feels like this is what I've waited for. This is a school that will give me hope and inspiration and aspiration and tell me it's going to be okay. And that's the bit we try and achieve for the families.
That's so lovely, Angela. And it's actually very exceptional, I would say, and unique to hear the kindness and passion and compassion that you're talking about your students, because we like to cover neurodivergence on the Parents Show as much as possible, because we know quite often parents are isolated, sometimes very, very unfairly stigmatized. Yes. Children are too, can be a little bit marginalized. And we want to try through the show to bring the children and the parents right into the center of conversations around education. So it's really heartwarming to hear how committed you are to making their lives different.
Yeah, I think that's the thing for families, isn't it? It's if your child is very different to the cohort of children they're with or the school where the cohort are different, you know, what that means to a family and how difficult that is for families. You know, it's the Welcome to Holland, you know, poem that I know a lot of your listeners will know, you know, and I always compare it to, you know, when you're pregnant and you have all these hopes and dreams and aspirations for your child, are they going to play number 7 for Manchester United? You know, of course you've got all those dreams and aspirations. And then you have a child, and as your child goes through the milestones, they're not like the people that you might have met in antenatal classes, or your child stands out and your child's different. And that doesn't mean to say that your child is not the child. You just take a different path, don't you? You don't go to Holland, but you might go to Italy, and Italy's wonderful and all the things that are there. And that's the different pathway you choose for your child. But unfortunately, services are not out there currently, are they? And some families get very isolated, very left, feeling that there's no hope, you know, that they are, what am I going to do? How is this going to be? The process that parents have to go through. you know, the number of parents who don't stay together because they blame each other. It's because of something I did, something I didn't do, something that happened in pregnancy. Should I have done this instead? And at the end of the day, it's the card you're dealt. That's what I always say to parents. You know, it's the card you're dealt, but your child is equally unique and amazing and incredible in a different way. Yeah, and it's just in a different way to other people's children. And it's about taking that child and saying, okay, what can we do? What are we going to do? How do we give that child independence and a future? And I'm going to say this because I say this to the staff every single day, I say this to the parents. Nothing we do at Southfield is about today. It's about the child when they're 16, 19 and 25. And what's that going to look like? What is that future? Can they make friends? Can they socialise? Do they know what they're good at? And that's no different to anybody else's child, is it? You know, that's what everybody wants for their child. And being neurodivergent, of course, brings a whole host of additional difficulties. Life is tough enough, isn't it? Life is tough for everybody, especially in current times. Everybody's feeling it. Everybody's struggling in all sorts of respects. And that's the recognition that it is going to be okay. And we're going to give you hope along the way that your child is incredible and your child is amazing. And let's see how far we can take them.
Awesome. Absolutely awesome. I love the positivity in everything you're saying, Angela. And so you kind of answered my next question, but you're let's go for it. How do you support people's well-being and confidence? I've got an inkling already of how you do it, but I'd love to hear your whole approach.
Yeah, so again, for anybody who's listening who knows me, they'll know what I'm going to say because I've got really strong views on this. If you can get through life being confident, and if you can get through life having self-esteem and know what you're good at, then you're well on the way. You know, you can take the curveballs that life's going to throw you, and you can remember things that have happened in the past, and you learn from those experiences, don't you? So for our kids, it's about finding where is your skill set? What is it you're amazing at? What is it we can foster? How do we keep telling you how incredible you are? And I'm going to tell you a story. It happened literally this afternoon. I went up the corridor and I had a young lad who was out of class, who's you know, normally not in the corridor. And I said, well, what's the matter? What's happened? And he said, I've let everybody down. Yeah, and this is a boy who, when he joined us, was not in a good place. You know, he hadn't been in school full time. Education hadn't worked for him. He really struggled initially. He had lots of behaviours, lots of really challenging behaviours. And he said, can we go to this room, and me and you, and can I talk to you? And I was just, what did that mean for this child who previously would have had behaviours, somebody might have got injured, and then, of course, then he'd have been filled with remorse. You know, he said, I know I'm not ready for the classroom. And that was just incredible. And we went into this room, and I said, come on, sit down. Tell me what's the matter. And we've got sports days coming up next week. Anybody who knows me, I'm hugely competitive. and I feel like I've made some of the Southfield kids a bit too competitive as well. And it was about lunchtime. They were practicing for sports day. And somebody had not started on the start line. And he was telling me that, you know, this child had cheated and how strongly he felt about that. Because all he wants to do on sports day is make his mum proud. And for him, it was to win the race. So we had a long conversation about, you know, in life, you know, I clearly was saying to him, it's not always about the winning. Sometimes I don't believe that myself, but, you know, in life, it's not always about the winning. It's about the taking part and have you done your best? And we had this long conversation about have you done your best? And of course, then it transpired that he'd pushed his friend. But to hear this young boy being able to share with me that he knew he had done something that wasn't okay.
Yeah.
It certainly wasn't okay at Southfield School because we've got clear rules for the children that they, you know, clear boundaries that they know. But then to the reflection, and that's what I said to him. I said, to hear your reflection is just incredible. I actually thought at one point I was going to cry. And so, okay, I think we need to end this conversation. But to see how far he's come in the journey and to speak to him and think, do you know what? He's going to be okay in the rest of his life because he knows rules now. He knows what's acceptable. He knows what's not acceptable. But to feel that journey in the last 4 years with him through Southfield, because previously it was behaviour that he displayed, but he was so upset because he'd let himself down.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's not just incredible because that's what everybody wants for every child, isn't it? That they can get to that point of reflection, what's okay, what's not okay, and the 16, 19, 25 journey.
Oh, that it's such a lovely story. And you can't blame him for his sense of justice because he doesn't want people cheating. But indeed, the self-reflection, I mean, that's very mature. That's really mature and must.
And I said, it was only a matter of, you know, this time last year that people wouldn't have been able to do that. But that, what's that down to? I'd love to sit here and tell you it's down to me being the head teacher at Southfield School. Of course I would. But it's not. It's down to this incredible team that are around me who every day just give and give and give. No matter what happens, you know, they just bounce back and they keep going because they get it. You know, they dig deep themselves. And whether that's to reflect on something that happened in their childhood, about their schooling, about an adult who gave up on them, or whether they're thinking about their own children, you know, it's that how do we support our young people to be okay? How do we know? You know, and I believe that kids are made at primary school. I think that's who they're going to be in later life. And if we can get our year sixes to leave with a real sense of pride in knowing who they are, knowing that it's okay to not be okay, because we all tell each other that as adults, but knowing that they can tell a trusted person, I don't feel okay. I don't think I'm okay. I'm not regulated enough to get into this room. I'm not regulated enough to go on a bus. Or then they're going to be okay, aren't they? They're going to be fine in later life.
Absolutely. It's making them, like, allowing them the space to think things through, and they're set. They're really, really set. I always like to ask about inclusion at school, but your school is inclusion on another level. But will you share a little bit of your philosophy about it with us, please, Angela?
Yeah, so for us, inclusion is about seeing the amazing things in every single child that's here. I've literally told somebody this morning, I beat myself up last Friday night on my drive home. A young boy came to see me to show me his drawing last week. So he's really into his art. And, you know, we're all about getting kids off iPads. You know, that's the thing. Trying to get them into books, trying to get them into a hobby, trying to get them into art. And he showed me last week the most amazing piece of artwork I've seen in such a long time. He had drawn every child in his class. He'd drawn every member of staff. And he'd asked all of them what their favorite things were. So this is a pupil that's in year three. And he'd drawn everybody's face with the thing that was their favorite thing. Honestly, it was almost incredible. So somebody liked a dolphin, he'd drawn their face as a dolphin. Somebody else liked a computer game, he'd drawn that. And I'd driven home thinking, you know, I'm a failing head teacher. It's not good enough. What else can I do? What am I doing for the arts children? And we've got a big drive on that. So we'll do a lot of creative artwork. But what about the children who've got real talents in art? You know, have I done enough as a head teacher? And came to the conclusion, no, definitely not. So I got home last Friday and my partner said, you know, you've got to watch some TV. No, and I said, I need 30 minutes. Went up to my study, shut the door, started Googling who in Hertfordshire teaches art to children with special education. And it literally found somebody, was transpired by the team's meeting on Monday. She came in today and we've just appointed her as our new art teacher.
Awesome.
So isn't that just incredible? And it's just somebody who's going to take the artist is going to be a couple hours a week, but how far can she take them in art? Because this is the other thing about special educational needs schools. You know, I don't think, for anybody who's not been to a special educational needs school, they're just a school. And I think that's the bit that people don't get. They think there's some, you know, different, no, we run the school here like any other school in the country. But it also means that I've got a duty to take the kids as far as I can possibly take them. I haven't got skills in art, so let me find the person that can. And I think that's, for me, that's what inclusion is. It's about every child, can we take them as far as we possibly can on that journey? And whether that's in music, whether that's in art, whether that's in singing, a big drive at Southfield about singing, because that makes everybody feel good. Whether you can sing or not, it makes you feel good. But it's about getting the whole community together and rubbing along nicely. That's what I always say to the kids and the staff. Sometimes in life, we don't get along with some people other than others. But it's about, can we tolerate? Can we accept? Can we accept that we're all different? We all come with different skill sets. And can we bring us all together, that there's a future there? So I hope that was something that literally just happened in the last week. But it is about all of us being the best version of ourselves. And I think that's the thing I've always tried to bring to Southfield. You know, I'm very passionate. I work on myself every day. Yeah, I think we all do. There are people come with very conceived perceptions about me being Scottish. What does that mean? Yeah, you know, I can be feisty. I'm well aware of that. But it's working on ourselves, isn't it? That this is who we really want to be. And can we take a whole community? Yeah, can I take the staff to be the best they can be? Can we take the kids to be the best they can be? Sometimes for our children, I can't control where they might have come from, but I can certainly try and give them a better future. So that's what I think inclusion is.
Yeah, it's beautiful. And I think the high expectations you're setting for your children are unfortunately probably a little bit unique as well, because I think people tend to manage expectations for children with special educational needs, and you're really modelling how that's not necessary and that they should aim absolutely as high. It might be a bit harder to find their special thing, but you should be relentless and tenacious in finding it.
Yeah, and I think, you know, I've been lucky in my career. I've worked in a whole cohort of different schools, you know, whatever the sector is, I've I've probably had a gig there somewhere. And I think I worked in the independent sector for a while. You know, these are schools that are very expensive for families. I know what that looks like. And I think that's how I lead Southfield. You know, if this was an independent school, what would you get? What value for money would you get for your child? And we try and provide all of those things at Southfield free of charge to our parents. We try not to ask people for money because money's tight. But how can we stretch a really small budget to provide, you know, just think, for example, what's happening next week. We've got Music for Autism in, which is live classical music. Because for some of them, my children, that's their thing. You know, so it's how do you provide those with limited budgets, but that everybody has a chance at the big world out there. Because for lots of our parents, you know, they do struggle. Of course they struggle. We're okay here. There's over 70 of us. You know, we can take the kids places. There's lots of them. We're struggling. We can do a change of pace. Lots of our families don't have that luxury, do they? Lots of them are quite isolated. But it's making sure that I am going to open up the world to their children and find that thing.
That's fantastic. And you mentioned parents, and actually that's what I'd love to talk to you about next. How do you work with parents? So they're spread across the county. That must be a bit of a challenge in itself. Do you also have parents for the local community? How does that work? How does that differ?
So it is a real challenge at Southfield. So we've got, you know, a fairly large cohort bring the children in, so their parents we see every day. But for some parents who live much further afield, their children might be in the local authority transport. So that's much harder to keep the parents informed to what's happening in school, to see them on a regular basis. Sports days next week, you know, we always get a massive turnout to sports days. So it's capturing those moments when parents can come in, because, you know, lots of families are trying to hold down jobs currently and they can't always take time off work. But it's making sure that they know what's happening at Southfield and the deal their kids are getting. We have two Facebook pages. We've got a private Facebook page where we give the magic of the week. And we also have a public Facebook page. We've got our school website, Southfield School at Hatfield. You know, we're trying to do that PR so that parents can get a glimpse of what's happening, regular comms to parents. But it's also that, I always say to parents when they come in, it's not just your child coming to Southfield. It has to be the whole family coming to Southfield. Because if you're not okay, your child's not going to be okay. So it is also saying to parents, there's nothing that a parent's going to tell me that I've never heard. Right? I think sometimes parents think that, oh, they're never going to hear this, that, you know, there might be something that's happened, that they might think the school are not going to be happy about this. If we don't know, I can't help people's children. And it's saying, if you can't tell us, then who can you tell? Yeah, there's plenty of us here. And there's always sort of something, somebody that you like better than others. You'll book that appointment, come and see us, come and have a conversation, have a phone call. But also for the parents who are struggling, pick up the phone, tell us you're struggling. What can we do? Because that's the extra mile the staff do want to go. Is it a communication book that needs to come home? Is it a conversation with your child in school? Is it just to alert us that, for example, families might have separated? Because then we can really help your children and also you as a parent.
It's lovely, really lovely to hear, Angela. And we talked a little bit about this, but I'd love to know what achievements the students have celebrated recently. A lot of them are going to be celebrating Sports Day next week, but recently, what have you celebrated with the children?
So for us, celebration is, it can be very different to what people think celebration is. And I'm just thinking, so we have an internal login system. We log everything. You know, it's really important. I know exactly what's going on in the school every day. And it can be from, I'm just thinking this week, we had a little boy who's weed in the urinal for the first time in his life. Okay, that was massive. And the staff were celebrating beyond. We've had a child who, for the first time yesterday, asked to go to the toilet. Yeah, he's just not at that point. But and the whole staff celebrated yesterday. And, you know, it could be something from a child picking up a pencil for the first time and wanting to write. First words or extension on vocabulary. For, you know, some of the children have their pre-verbal have very limited vocabularies when they come to us. Yeah, you know, Charles, I'll give you another example. Somebody put on our system last night. They knew it would make me smile. It's called a wow moment at Southfield. And she put that they had been doing the teacher approach for autism, and they've been showing photographs of the children. They're getting independent and moving around school. You know, where would you find this person? And one of the little girls said, Angela, she's my friend. You know, for me, that just blew me away for the whole week. Yeah, you know, that was like my thing of the week. Because this is a child, when I engage with her every day and I chat to her, and she looks at me like she's never seen me before.
Yeah.
Yeah, every single day. It's like, not you, go away, don't talk to me. So that was a magical moment. And that's the celebration at Southfield. For a child getting changed on their own, putting shoes on their own, because it's all those life skills that they're going to need. And the parents will tell you, it's my moan to them all the time. I glare at them like, why are you doing that for your child? Stop putting their coat on. Stop putting their bag on their back. Because actually, do you know what? When they're in school, they do it all by themselves. And it is that you've got to let them take risks. We cannot wrap kids. Any kid, you can't wrap them up in cotton wool. You have to let them take risks. And sometimes it's going to go belly up. And that's... But what did we learn? But if you're not striving that the child, then you're stopping their outlook on life, aren't you? Take the risk, because that's gone back to the original question you asked me, which was about self-esteem and confidence and independence in life, isn't it?
Yeah. What's the worst that's going to happen? They won't get the bag on right the first time. They'll do it the second time. Totally, totally. So let's talk a little bit about challenges. I would say you probably have more than your fair share of challenges. Talk to us a little bit about what you're seeing.
So in terms of challenges in the children, COVID, of course, has had a massive impact on everybody. You know, we're going to have to ride that storm for a while as a community. We see the attachment that children are coming in with, especially their mothers. That's all they've just been with their mother, because some children might have not been in nursery or preschool or reception, or, you know, and they come in and children just not been ready. You know, toilet training, we see a lot more children need more support in toileting. And again, that's national. It's not just the way children with special educational needs. School places. You know, we did an open day earlier on in the week. You know, the first line I'm now having to say to parents is, I'd love to stand here and give you hope. It is our prospective parents. I would love to tell you your child's going to get a place at Southfield School. But the reality is, how much are you prepared to dig? What are you going to throw at it? Because nobody's going to give you a place at Southfield School anymore. Yeah, it's getting, the nature of the kids coming in are more complex. The places are getting in bigger demands. The tribunals are getting, you know, the numbers are increasing. And it is, and that's the bit that I'm going to say to you today. That's a bit that breaks my heart, because there's just not enough places to go around. And I'm the world's worst. My leadership team will tell you this, because I want to give everybody a chance and get everybody. And unfortunately, that means class sizes go up. And that means that we start to lose the identity of who we are and what it is we can offer children. Money. There's the biggest challenge for all of us, isn't it? There's just not enough to go around. And running a school like this costs a lot of money. Yeah, you know, I'd love to say it's staff salaries, but that's not true. You know, we know the reality of life, that our teaching assistants actually can earn more work in the supermarkets than they can dealing with the children they deal with on a day in and day out basis. And that's not okay. But they're the politics ones, aren't they? And they're not the bits that I can solve. And I'd say to you, you know, the challenges for us are how do I get staff, really good staff in and keep them? Because I can't give them more money, I haven't got it. And that means that we have to think outside the box at Southfield. I can give an amazing training, and that's what we do give. Huge training programs, amazing trainers. We really upskill people very quickly. Sometimes we make them so upskilled that they do go off for bigger and better things. But that's called life, isn't it? That's also called life. So I'd say the recruitment and retention of staff is a big one for everybody at the minute. Recruitment is tough. Again, since COVID, people don't want these sorts of jobs, do they? People want to work from home. But also it takes very special people to work at Southfield. We want people who want to invest in themselves, who want to grow, who want to develop, who want to get better. And I'm really, really lucky, because the cohort of staff here, that is who we work with day in, day out. But it is tough. It's, there's only limited people to go around in Hertfordshire. And for the salaries getting paid, you're not going to recruit somebody who lives miles and miles and miles away. They have to be quite local. Any other teachers listening, they'll know that. We're all after the same candidates. And I'm going to do a little plug here. We have got some vacancies currently. So if anybody's interested, if anybody goes, you know what, I'm just going to give it a chance. My opening remarks, if you look at our recruitment packs, are you bored with life? Do you want something different? Do you want to do something you might never have done before, but you've got a passion to work with kids? Okay, give us a knock on the door and come and see us. Because sometimes it takes people to try something different in their career, and they find a thing. And I'd say to you, for the staff that work here, they've all found a thing. They all feel like they've come home every day when they step through the door, because we get to work with these amazing children. I could go on for hours about challenges, but that's not what your listeners want to hear. It's tough times, isn't it? You know, the white paper is going to really, you know, what does that mean for families? Parents are panicking already. Does that mean my child can remain at Southfield School? Does that mean they're going somewhere else? That's tough. Local government reform is, you know, who knows what that's going to mean for Southfield when we've got children from the whole Hertfordshire. And of course, the big one for Southfield currently is redesignation of the school. You know, the local authority have said that they're going to redesign, that they were not an ALD school anymore. So what does that mean? I think we're ahead of the game. I think we knew it was coming. I think we've tried to shape the cohort already. So I'm hoping that's not going to be too much change for the families and the kids here. But it's I feel like we're in unprecedented times again. There's lots going on, isn't there?
There really is, absolutely. And even more challenging for you, I have to say. So if parents are listening in, we had this conversation with the wonderful organisation, HFL Education, about getting ready for school and how to get your kids ready for starting school. You touched on a little bit, like, don't do everything for your child. Allow them to try and allow them to fail a little bit. How? Give a couple of tips.
Yeah, I think we're in a society where we've got this clear rules. Kids are going to be in school at reception. Kids are, you know, there's all those. But the success of a placement at Southfield is based on your child, not on anybody else's child. What does your child need? So we start our transition as early as we can. We've already started for the children coming in September. It's meeting with the parents. So that's what we've done. The initial conversation is a meeting with the parents. Tell us everything we need to know about your child. Tell us everything we need to know about you. Tell us what you're anxious about. Tell us what you know, you're going to keep you awake. How can we support you with that in the first instance? And you can't rush a transition into a new school. Yeah, for lots of our children, some of our children, they come and straight from day one, you know, they come on their first visit and they don't want to leave. You know, straight away, we know where they're going on that journey. For others who might not have been in education full time, of course, we want to get them up to education as quickly as we can. But that transition package might be different for every family. And it is that, tell us everything we need and then trust the school. Trust the school. We've done this a lot. Yeah, I've done this with thousands of children and that we know how to make that transition work. And I was going to say to you, I think it's really important to say, I'd love to say for every family it works at Southfield, but that wouldn't be reality. You know, children are placed at Southfield, unfortunately, and it is the wrong setting for them. You know, we know what we're good at. For children, for example, with social, emotional and mental health, sometimes Southfield just isn't the right setting. And we also know for some children, a school setting is also not the right setting for them. It might be they need a different type of education. So I'd say, what are we hoping for? We're hoping people will be honest and just, you know, I think sometimes parents get, you know, they get so anxious about telling the story. What does a school really need to know that? Because they've been judged elsewhere for that. They've been judged by telling the truth. And it's, if you come to Southfield, just tell us everything we need to know and we'll love you, we'll look after you and we'll give you what we all had hoped in life that people would have done for us. And I think, you know, that's the thing that, the things we're on Southfield, what would I want? What would I hope for? What maybe is life not always given me? You learn by those things, don't you? And you say, you know what? I'm going to try and make that right for another family. I'm going to try and make that right for another member of staff, for example, yeah? And it is that transition. What is it we need and what is it that your child needs to be successful?
That's brilliant, Angela. The compassion and the high expectations and the determination to make a difference is really just, it's just awesome to hear about. And I can see you're not sitting still at any point. I think you're always, you've got the next goal in mind. So what's your next vision or the vision for Southfield in the coming years?
Yeah, so this is my fifth year here, which is quite hard to believe because it feels like I've been here a year. Honestly, it's the time passes so quickly in education. I feel like we're on a journey. You know, sometimes it's been a bit of a rocky journey, but we're definitely on a journey now where it feels like finally it's all coming together. What do we want? We want the Southfield to be the best school out there. Of course we do. And that's what everybody wants for Southfield. You know, everybody wants their child to be in an amazing school, don't they? Where they say, you know, Southfield, wow. And in fact, the conversation with somebody this morning, I said, what would you want? And they said, I want Southfield to be known as, you know, we're the lead school in Hertfordshire and SEN for music. I'd like Southfield to be known for singing. I like, excellent. What do I want Southfield to be known for? The school that stands up to those promises. You know, we are the school that does what it says in the tin. We've got huge aspirations for children. I've got a statement in my book. I carry it around with me every day. And it says what I think a Southfield child is. Somebody who's got self-esteem, confidence, a can-do attitude, can do things for themselves, and somebody who's got a really promising future. That's the journey we're on. We're driving every day to be that school. Sometimes we're going to mess up. That's just called life. But equally, it's owning the mistakes. And I think if any parents who you deal with me, we have some really difficult conversations with parents that I think other professionals should have had before us, but we will have those conversations because that's important that we're all on the same starting page, isn't it? So for that to continue, our collaboration with the community. They're amazing to us. Fundraising, we've been so lucky. The local community have embraced us, have supported us. We've got a new playground. We've got Sunken Trampolines, Brockett Hall. I'm going to give a shout out to them. They built a golf course for us. I think we could be the only special needs school in the country that's got a golf course.
I think you might win that one. Absolutely. Wow, that's fantastic.
We've just opened a forest school area. So it's you know, it's all coming together. What do we need? I'm going to do a plug. What do we need? We need more funds. Of course we do. And if any of your listeners out there have, if they've got a company who might be interested in sponsoring us or donating or company, what would I like? I need £30,000 for a new sensory room if anybody's, you know, got any links. I would also love for the children to have some bucket swings. That's the bit they ask me for every day and make me feel like I'm failing in my job. I need about £60,000 for that.
Wow.
Which I haven't got. We need a new school minibus. You know, I need another 10. We're nearly there on the minibus. I need another 10,000. You know, unfortunately, we can only make the magic happen by those funds and by having amazing staff. If anybody's listening and they think, I want to give it a shot, come and see us. But what a school, it's on the journey, and that journey is looking very exciting for everybody involved.
Oh, brilliant. Angela, it's been an absolute pleasure talking to you, and just keep doing what you're doing and keep the magic going at Southfield School. It's really just mind-blowing to hear.
Yeah, I just do one more
away. Just look away.
Who did that? The governors. The governors at Southfield, the amount of time they give to the school, led by Peter Hebden, who's our chair of governors. Incredible people who are very passionate about the school as well, and also want the best for every family that's here.
Wonderful.
Thank you so
much. Thanks, Angela. It's just great to talk to you.
Thanks very much for having me.
That's Angela O'Rourke, the head teacher at Southfield School in Hertfordshire.
And so we come to the end of another show. Thanks for listening. A big thank you to all our guests and for their great contributions. The Parent Show will be back again next week.
So tune in every Thursday night at our new time, 7 p.m. and again on Sundays, 8 p.m. Or don't forget to listen to our extensive library of podcasts from past shows.
Good night.
The Parent Show on Mix 92.6. Sponsored by Raiden Solicitors, award-winning specialist family lawyers. See raidensolicitors.co.uk.